The following story is fictional and does not depict any actual person or event.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
In a dock trash terminal.
As long as you dress the code and you watch the areas you're assigned, you're going to do just fine.
Trash is in barges.
Timberland's okay?
Timberland's high test. But are those not skinned?
I don't know.
Well, you better find out. Because we get a lot of spillage. And if a bottle of bleach and chlorine collide, and you slip, it'll burn right through to the bone.
What was that?
The body of a scantily dressed woman is on the trash barge.
Mother.
The supervisor crosses himself as trash falls around the body. Later.
Boy, it used to be we'd light a cigar, throw some cologne on a mask.
No perfume's gonna help this girl. She's been marinating a while. Victim's a Jane Doe. Early 30s. ME's guy said she's been dead since Friday night. Driver picked her up this morning.
And where's the genius who moved her?
Supervisor went off to call me. Driver went to puke. That leaves the new kid. Maybe he wanted to make sure she was dead.
Well, one look would have told him that.
Ah, what are you going to do? It was his first day on the job. He wasn't expecting visitors.
He blows our forensics?
Not to mention he wakes me up every Tuesday and Thursday morning.
Nah, these guys only handle commercial zones. The city handles residential.
Well, does the new guy talk?
I already tore him a new one, okay?
Yeah, there goes my fun.
Detectives Crisco and Green would like to pick your brains.
No ID, purse, anything.
Okay, we're going to need the entire load separated so our techs can examine it.
Don't have to go through the whole thing.
She popped out the front, means I picked her up on the Lower East Side, probably somewhere along Essex Street.
All right, thanks. Let's get a canvas started, see if anybody saw anything, and have them examine all the commercial bins.
The officer nods.
That's a tough first day on the job.
It's even tougher last day.
They look down at the bruised and bloody body. The New York City skyline is lit up at night. Police officers work the city streets. The word law moves in front of a squad car and a man is led away in handcuffs. Detective Lenny Briscoe is wearing his tie loosened around his open shirt collar. Detective Eddie Green is on the phone at his desk. Then Lieutenant Anita Van Buren is shown. The word order appears in front of a courthouse and a U.S. flag waves. Scenes from a courtroom are shown. Executive Assistant D.A. Jack McCoy is leaning on his desk. Assistant D.A. Serena Sutherland is also at a desk, and D.A. Arthur Branch has his arms folded across his chest. Law and order. The detectives and the assistant D.A.s walk down a hallway together. The corpse is lying on the medical examiner's table.
Single gunshot wound at the lower temporal regions of the brain. Also found defensive wounds on the hands and arms, but most of the abrasions are post-mortem.
5 tons of garbage will do that.
Slug's a .38 caliber, pretty banged up. Ballistics has it now.
Look at the track marks on her arm.
Tox screen shows both cocaine and heroin in her system.
Speedball.
High's supposed to be like free-falling in an elevator for 30 stories.
Well, her loved ones will be glad to know she died with a smile on her face.
If we ever find them.
Well, maybe I can help you with that.
Oh, please tell me she's got her name and address tattooed somewhere.
Close.
Are those what I think they are?
Well, they are not water balloons. Saline implants.
Okay, so that narrows it down to every woman in every bar on 2nd Avenue.
Actually, they come with catalog and lot numbers. The lab that manufactured them might be able to help you track down her surgeon.
At the surgeon's office.
Cerulean Laboratories, they were one of the first to make implants anatomical. Most other implants were round, but 7 years ago people were opting for anatomics because they looked less fake. They have a more natural slope.
We appreciate the history lesson, but we really just need to know this woman's name.
I'm sure you know that information's privileged.
Well, somehow I don't think she'll mind.
Lenny shows him a photo of the corpse, then he sits at his laptop computer.
Here we are. Jane Hunt. I have a billing address.
Lenny and Ed walk down the sidewalk.
Call me old-fashioned, but plastic cools my engine.
You seem to enjoy Shirley. What's the name from the spaghetti joint?
Believe me, everything about Shirley was real.
Well, I guess you two never went jogging.
When did you become such an expert on what's real and what isn't?
Man, I'm a regular Rene Descartes.
Rene, I think I got a lap dance from her once. Therefore, I am. Somehow, I don't think she lived in this building.
A plaque reads, Simpson Walters. A music video plays.
Can you come crawling back? But I won't be
So Jane Hunt is Patty Poitras?
Is that supposed to mean something to somebody?
How about 3 million records sold?
A bald man stops the video.
You're sure it was her?
Ed shows the photo.
Oh, God. I've been her agent going on 6 years. Good old Patty, always with the great timing. That sounds terrible.
That is terrible, Mr. Sanford.
Pierced Tongue. It's her band. Has an album coming out in 2 weeks. Their first in 3 years.
3 years? What happened? Writer's block?
No, she lost her husband, Shane Mallory. Used to be the lead singer of Crisis.
Oh, is that the guy that took a header off the brownstone in Brooklyn?
He's got an entire section of Prospect Park dedicated to him.
When was the last time you talked to Patty?
Not for a couple of weeks. She was undergoing rehab at the Daylight House in Riverdale. From what I hear, she was doing well.
Daylight House, Riverdale, New York.
Last time I saw her was around 7 Friday night. She was on her way out of group therapy. About an hour later, I was told she checked out.
Checked out? Is this rehab or the Four Seasons?
The Daylight program is voluntary. We don't force anyone to stay.
Well, do you know why she left?
No. It seemed like she was making real progress, especially given the circumstances.
Well, what circumstances?
She lost her mother when she was 15. Her father physically abused her, and her husband killed himself.
She hit the trifecta.
Something must have set her off.
Well, there was something. She didn't share it during group.
What about visitors or phone calls?
Not allowed. The program depends upon isolation. No television, no radio. We don't even permit our patients to carry money.
Well, if she didn't have any cash, how'd she get all the way downtown?
We provide patients with a courtesy van.
Straight to her courteous dealer.
Our driver took her home. After that, she's on her own.
Outside with the driver.
Friday night? Yeah, she wanted me to take her home.
You sure she got there?
I do my job.
Seeing as though you were the last person to see her breathing, maybe you should come with us.
Look, I don't want any trouble, okay? Around 7:30, I get buzzed to meet her with a car in front. When I'm coming out of the garage, I see Patty hopping into a town car.
And you didn't report this?
I figured she called a car service, didn't think it was that big a deal.
Even after you heard she was dead?
I didn't know she got killed that night.
Well, how do you know it was a car service?
You're not gonna say anything to Dr. Zucker, right?
That depends.
Black town car. License plate, star 5.
Later.
Yeah, sure, I seen her. What is that? Friday? Saturday?
It's probably Friday.
That's right. Mr. DeLeva. He was my real client that night. I dropped him at a dinner party in Scarsdale at 7. Told me I should pick him up at midnight.
So you figure you'd make a few extra bucks, huh?
Yeah, sure, why not? As soon as I hit Riverdale, there she is. Offers me a hundy to take her to the East Village. All the way, faster. Then we get there, she tells me she's busted. What am I gonna learn, right?
You let her jump the fare?
Hey, I'm nice, not stupid. She says, wait, and she don't come down 5 minutes with the cash. I'm supposed to go up to apartment 3F.
So did she come down?
Not her, some other freaky-looking chick.
All right, we need that address.
Apartment of Rain Bridgman, 173 East 4th Street.
I can't believe she's dead.
Hey, I'm sorry, but if you could just tell us what she was doing here Friday night.
Yeah, she was stressing, you know, about the new CD. Damn critics waiting with a knife and a fork.
She left rehab a week early to come down here and just talk shop?
Yeah.
She has a nose ring.
I'm not buying that ring.
Look, kid, your friend wound up in a dumpster, junked up with a bullet in her brain. Whoever helped her off the wagon may have killed her.
Mommy? A little boy enters.
Hey, Ricky, sweetie. Listen, I'll be right in. Just go back to bed, okay?
Her hair is streaked with several colors.
All right. Patty was really in bad shape when she came here that night. She said she needed to score, so I hooked her up with a couple of grams of coke, some smack.
That you just happened to have lying around?
I thought this was about Patty.
Okay, what happened next?
She took the stuff and she left.
So I guess she wasn't all that stressed, huh?
Hey, I loved Patty. But nobody gets high in front of my kid, okay?
Did she say where she was going?
Yeah, to hell. Is what she said. She could be dark like that sometimes, you know, especially since Shane. She said heroin was the only thing that could chill the demons in her head.
So was hell anywhere near where she lived?
Montauk? I doubt it. Look, I was all for her getting clean. It's just that when she called
me... Patty called you? When?
An hour before she got here, around 7.
Lenny looks at Ed.
You sure it was that early?
Yeah.
At night in Van Buren's office.
So it turns out that Patty was a regular chatty Kathy that day. Here is the incoming phone call that the nurse mentioned.
You traced the number?
Mm-hmm. It was a prepaid cellular. The phone call that Patty made afterwards isn't.
Well, she called the guitarist. What's her name?
Rain.
And you're not going to believe who the next phone call was from. Going to give you a little hint. Former NYPD detective turned best-selling author.
Mike Foster.
Mm-hmm. Who happens to be writing a book about the death of Patty's husband, Shane Mallory.
Which was ruled a suicide, if I'm not mistaken.
My kind of book. Short.
Apartment of Mike Foster.
Jumped or pushed? How's that for a title?
It's catchy, but if he jumped, you don't sell many books.
Are you kidding? There's no chance this was not a homicide. Come on. Rock stars today, they're like ball players in our time, right, Lenny? I mean, bucks, broads, booze, hey, whatever you want. Can you imagine Jolting Joe whacking himself?
Joe didn't have track marks running up and down his arms. I mean, the best forensics team in the city said that Shane Mallory's death was a do-it-yourselfer.
Of course they did. You know, what else are they going to do, you know, when they're clueless?
So enter the great and powerful Mike Foster, huh?
I already solved 3 cases as a civilian I couldn't have as a cop.
Well, as a cop, that damn Constitution gets in your way.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about time. I got a lot more of it now than I did when I was carrying a badge. I mean, the public, they want quick closure. Emphasis on quick. And civil servants are paid to oblige.
And you get paid a lot more.
Consider this. Mallory spent half his 26 years high on something. Maybe he was depressed, maybe he was a psycho. Whatever. But don't you think he would have done the deed before he hit it big? Let's talk turkey. You want to know why Patty called me Friday night? Hey, I was a cop, remember?
Okay, so what'd you talk to her about?
She did all the talking, actually. She threatened to sick her lawyers on me if I kept interviewing her friends.
Let me guess. She was your prime suspect.
Do I think she helped Shane off the ledge? No. But I do think she knows who did. Look, her husband Shane was worth millions. And the rumors were that he was about to dump her.
Now that she's dead, the millions go to...
Well, she didn't have a will. Dear old dad. Who she happened to sue on more than one occasion. She was a real sweetheart, this one.
Lenny glances at Ed. Later, a man is holding a beer can.
It wasn't a lawsuit. It was what they call an injunction. I sold some of her childhood clothes and photos on the eBay, and she wanted me to stop.
I can't imagine why.
Hey, I paid for it all.
Well, now she can pay you back.
Oh, right. I'd be elected pope before I got a penny from her.
The rehab said that she got a call about a family emergency.
Not from this family. We didn't talk to each other in 2 years except through our attorneys.
Must have made for a hell of a Thanksgiving dinner.
I'm gonna give it to you straight. Jane had her screws loose, if you know what I mean. She was a liar, a junkie, and a whore.
She's also your daughter, and she's dead. Show some respect.
Yeah, I'd be the only one. You should read some of her fan mail.
In the squad room.
It should have been you who jumped off that roof. I don't think Jeffrey Dahmer got mail this bad. Slut, you ruined Shane in crisis.
I won't even read this one in mixed company.
Her daddy was right. Ain't no love here. She gets more hate mail than I get junk mail.
You know what? You might save yourselves some time by talking to someone who actually liked her.
Patty Wojtek Memorial Concert, Central Park. A picnic table displays candles, photos, teddy bears, and flowers while a band does a sound check in the background.
Patty dies and we sell out for the first time in 2 years.
Maybe a lot of people loved her.
Well, Patty couldn't have cared less. She just wanted to make music. And the thing with Shane, man, to the world it was like she was Yoko busting up the Beatles.
She wasn't.
Oh, look, Shane had his own crap to deal with long before he met Patty. And now it's like his dying is some kind of major conspiracy. Like, Shane killed himself. Accept it.
Well, can you think of anybody that had a particularly hard time accepting it?
Rain picks up her guitar.
Actually, about 6 months ago, we were playing the Hammerstein, and this freak in a crisis t-shirt pushes his way to the stage and pulls a mic into the pit and starts ranting that Patty's a murderer.
Is there some reason you didn't tell us this before?
Well, before you were asking about drugs.
Does this freak have a name?
Your guys dragged him off. Ask them.
A man takes merchandise from a van.
Friday night, I was performing, bro.
Performing where?
On the steps of the Brooklyn Academy. Go ahead and ask them. They made me sign a bunch of forms.
I don't know, Grant. Patty Wojtek seems to be the focus of a lot of your anger.
not crying. She's dead, if that's what you mean.
Why? Because she had something to do with Shane Mallory's death?
With a hook in her teeth and a string through her nose, she's got run-down dreams. She's got run-down clothes. She stepped on the cracks and she hopped on the trains, but there's no looking back in those heavens. Chains. It's art, man. It's poetry.
He looks at a poster.
Shane touched a lot of souls. She destroyed all that.
And that's why she's in the morgue right now?
The guy boosts himself off a building with 2 grams of smack in his veins. God, no way. Listen to his words, man. Shane agonized over life, but he never stopped treasuring it.
Yeah, I guess forensics missed that CD.
Well, there's that expert that says that his, trajectory off the building means that he was pushed. You don't gotta write it down, dude. The other cop got all that.
What other cop?
At Mike Foster's.
Hey, I work a case, I talk to everyone.
Not if you step on our toes, you don't.
All right, I'm sorry. That's the last thing I want. I left a message for you at the precinct this morning. There's a guy, Travis Jones.
Were you supposed to know him?
Only if you're a rock historian. He was the original drummer for Crisis, you know? That is, until he introduced his girlfriend to his good buddy, Shane Mallory.
And the girlfriend was Patty Boitek?
Uh-huh, yep. And Travis gets dumped by both the girl and the band in one fell swoop, and Shane and Patty live happily ever after.
And Crisis goes on to fame and fortune without Travis.
Sounds like motive.
Exactly. Travis is a major league doper now, but he has this old diary of Patty's that indicates she really never loved Shane, that she only used him to further her own career. Hot stuff, huh? For the book, you know?
Publisher's dream.
Only at the last minute, Travis backs out, which just pissed me off to no end. Because I paid this guy, you know, you don't want to know how much. So I go to his place. Well, he's not there. So I let myself in.
Oh, wait a minute. You broke in?
I'm not a cop anymore. Okay? Hey, I paid him for the diary. I wanted what was mine.
So did you get it?
Oh, yeah. But that's not all I got.
He opens a desk drawer and removes a plastic bag containing a gun.
It's a 38?
Mm-hmm. Under Travis's bed. I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't let the papers know. I mean, let me break it in my book.
Apartment of Travis Jones, 39 Orchard Street.
That's like history, man. Past tense, me and Patty in it like years ago.
Yeah, time flies when you're dancing on the clouds.
I know that one. It's the Ramones.
My partner's talking about the smack, Travis, and how it may distort your sense of time.
It's an illness, man.
Well, he heard that you and Patty were giving each other first aid Friday night.
Patty! No. Patty made her choice years ago, dude.
He opens a beer.
She wanted to tiptoe up the ladder of corporate madness. Well, here's to you, Patty.
He sits on the day bed and drinks.
Oh, we got us one hell of a guy here, Ed. Girl throws him out, leaves him crawling under dirt for nickels and dimes, and he wishes her nothing but the best.
Well, maybe it was me that realized I was wrong about her from the start.
And what about Crisis?
Crisis is dead to me.
Yeah, so to speak.
Shane Mallory, Mr. Sensitive. Mr. Angst.
I can't believe it, man. The guy's he's like a bad trip.
Do you own a gun?
No. What the hell would I do with a gun?
Lenny and Ed stare at him.
Oh. Jeez. So I need a lawyer now.
We'll get back to you on that.
Leave him?
I believe on a good day he couldn't find his ass with both hands.
He had the motive. He lives 2 blocks away from the dumpster where Patty Boitek's body was found, and he had a weapon.
And that's a whole other story.
Oh, come on. You gonna take the word of a dope head over an ex-cop?
An ex-cop who broke into a civilian's house.
And who may have planted that gun.
Oh, come on.
Look, we're just saying what a defense lawyer is going to say. The fact is, Foster should have known better than to break the chain of evidence.
He was afraid if he waited, Jones would ditch the gun.
Speaking of which,
the serial number was filed off, and ballistics said the slug pulled out of the victim's body was way too damaged to analyze.
Well, I'll send it to the National Lab in D.C., see if they can work any magic. In the meantime, does this Travis Jones have a sheet?
Oh, yeah.
Eddie gives her a file. She puts on her glasses and reads it.
3 misdemeanors for possession, 1 assault.
He slugged the band's road manager.
I'll start the paperwork for a warrant. You go see if you can corroborate motive from someone other than Mike Foster.
Riverton Studios, 269 West 46th Street.
Complete and total karma. Man, if Shane knew about half the crap Patty pulled, man, blocking the release of her last album, trying to screw us out of royalties, he'd resurrect.
I take it you won't be sending Patty any flowers.
You got that right.
Just for the record, where were you two guys last Friday night?
At the Spotted Pony in Jersey.
Hey, what can you tell us about Travis Jones?
I can't even talk about him.
Well, he was a monster drummer. I mean, like a metronome, man. I mean, he knew what I was going to do before I even did it, you know? We tried to talk Shane out of axing him, but...
Shane's your ticket.
Yeah, without him, we were like a punk junk bar band. You know, when he died, me and Zach, we tried to connect with T, but he just blew us off. He said he was done with Crisis. He was through with the whole scene.
You think Travis still blames Patty for getting him fired from the band?
It's hard not to. She had Shane wrapped around her finger.
More like her needle.
Okay, thanks.
There was forensics, there was blood spatter on the gun. Matches Patty Wojtek's DNA.
Jack and Serena are in Arthur's office.
One drug addict killing another. It's not something a lot of people are going to lose sleep over.
Gee, Arthur, I never saw your compassionate side before.
Sure, let's legalize narcotics, put all the junkies on an island, let them kill themselves.
Don't tantalize me.
You're kidding, I hope.
You're entitled to hope.
I've heard a few good arguments to legalize drugs, but mass suicide wasn't one of them.
Now, with all the money we spend on the so-called war on drugs, we could buy all the poppy fields in the world and burn them to a crisp. But do we do it? No. And why? Because without a war on something, people in Washington wouldn't get elected.
Well, until Washington comes to its senses, we need to deal with Patty Wojtek, sir.
She's a sort of rock star.
Oh, I have a granddaughter. I know exactly who she is. But I also know that trying to build a case on an illegal break-in by a writer is like trying to do a kickflip without lifting your front foot off the skateboard. Grandson.
Well, in any case, the cops trust this writer's work.
That's a shock.
They think there's enough for an arrest.
We know this case will be high profile. To avoid any taint, why don't we let a grand jury make that decision?
There you go. Pass the buck to the public.
It's raining. Jack is sitting in an outdoor cafe and a man approaches.
Jack McCoy, right?
Have we had the pleasure?
Oh, not yet. My name is Jeremy Cook. I'll be representing Travis Jones.
You're a little early. I haven't even convened a grand jury yet.
Early bird worms and all that.
If we ever do arrest your client, I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of each other.
That's the thing. Mom always said, haste makes waste. No, that's not it. Be prepared. There you go. And thinking back, that was Dad. So, before one thing leads to another and we get all tangled up in that proverbial web, let's see what that judge thinks about that gun that supposedly belonged to my client.
You can't move to exclude evidence before we even know if there's going to be an arrest.
Of course you can't. That's an order to show cause.
Why the gun should be presented to the grand jury.
Why Mike Foster should be allowed to testify at all.
Jack stares at him.
Try the carpaccio. It's to die for.
Cook leaves. Chambers of Judge Rebecca Steinman.
Maybe I'm getting old, but I don't really see what we're doing here.
Exactly my point, Your Honor. Defense's motion, not only being without merit, is premature. The prosecution is permitted to present any and all evidence to the grand jury.
Not when that evidence will irrevocably prejudice said grand jury, and thereby lead to a trial which would publicly slander my client's good name.
He's a drug addict and a murderer.
Who's being premature now?
The fact is, the murder weapon had trace evidence of the victim's blood. It was found in your client's apartment.
By a man whose procedure was, shall I say, questionable? Mr. Foster's status as criminal suspect, indicted or otherwise, eliminates any possibility of full and fair testimony.
Excuse me?
He broke into my client's apartment.
So you're thinking he'll take the fifth on cross?
You read my mind, ma'am.
Only there is no cross-examination in a grand jury.
Look, we all know the prosecution can indict a ham sandwich if it wants to. I'm looking ahead to trial, where Mr. Foster won't be able to answer any of my questions without incriminating himself. If he doesn't take the fifth, he'll end up a defendant in his own trial.
Kudos on your creativity, Mr. Cook. The problem is there's no basis in law.
And that's why they keep adding new wings to the law library.
Your Honor, the idea that a writer was an agent for the state is absurd.
Perhaps. But I want to hear from witnesses, not lawyers. Evidentiary hearing tomorrow, 2 o'clock.
At night in Jack's office.
An evidentiary hearing preceding a grand jury presentation. If anything, he's original.
You drew the right judge.
Yeah, one who wants to see the law expand to meet the times.
One who doesn't mind being reversed on appeal.
Perhaps.
You can't think there's merit in Cook's argument.
If Foster's allowed to testify and the gun is admissible...
I hear an open the floodgates argument coming.
Then the cops could hire cat burglars to find evidence for them. The prosecution would then grant immunity and the Fourth Amendment would be down the toilet.
First of all, nobody hired Mike Foster.
So we don't give him money, we just grant him immunity for breaking and entering. I don't see the difference.
This is a unique set of facts we're dealing with here, Serena.
And it's also one that could set an unconscionable precedent.
That's a concern for judges, not prosecutors.
Really? What is our concern, then?
Putting a particular killer behind bars.
Supreme Court evidentiary hearing.
Here are copies of your previous 3 years' tax returns. Would you read what's listed as your occupation?
Mike looks at the forms.
Writer. And what was your former occupation?
I was a detective with the NYPD for almost 20 years, but I've been retired for about six.
You no longer involve yourself in active criminal investigations?
Of course not. Look, retirement was boring. I'd read the papers, I'd watch the tube. I had to do something. So I looked into a murder that had been closed for over 10 years, and then I wrote an article about it, and one thing led to another, and I had a 3-book deal.
No further questions.
Jeremy Cook stands and looks at Mike.
Did you have a key to Mr. Jones' apartment?
No.
Was the door unlocked when you got there?
No.
So, how did you manage to get in?
I know how to pick a lock.
Really? Where did you acquire such a useful skill?
When I was on the force, which I'm not anymore.
That's what they tell me. So in plain English, you entered my client's apartment illegally.
I paid your client for a diary. I entered the apartment to get what was mine.
That's nice. Now, would you please answer the question?
No, it wasn't legal.
Did you tell that to Detectives Briscoe and Green?
Yes.
I suppose they read you your rights on the spot.
No.
They cuffed you.
No.
Oh, I see. Once a cop, the big blue wall, etc., etc. The fact is, Detectives Briscoe and Green let you get away with a felony. Isn't that correct?
Objection.
Withdrawn. This is a copy of your last book, isn't it?
Yes.
Covers the Amanda Daly murder in New Orleans. That case was reopened based on your book. Isn't that true?
I think the book had an impact, yes.
Well, the fact is, a suspect was apprehended and later convicted based solely on your work.
Well, I did uncover a few new leads, yes.
You brought a criminal to justice. Sounds more like the job description for a cop than a writer.
I don't care what it sounds like. I'm not a cop.
Maybe that's why they needed your help.
Cook glances at the judge, then returns to his seat. Serena watches Jack shift in his chair. Lenny testifies.
My partner and I discovered that Patty Wojtek had called Mike Foster the night she was killed. We wanted to know why.
At any time in the course of your conversation with Mr. Foster, did you ask for his assistance in searching Travis Jones' apartment?
Not at all. Mr. Jones wasn't even a suspect.
Thank you, Detective Briscoe.
Jack sits and Cook steps forward.
So, you were in a bind. And you went running off to Mr. Foster for some help.
I didn't say that.
You would have liked to get into my client's apartment, isn't that right?
I didn't even know your client existed until Mike told me about him.
Move to strike. Please answer yes or no, Detective. Was there any time during your investigation that you would have found it pragmatic to enter Mr. Jones's premises?
Sure.
But you didn't have probable cause for a warrant, isn't that right?
It wasn't even on my radar.
Probable cause, yes or no?
No.
You and Mr. Foster go way back, isn't that right?
Hey, you work on the force long enough, you go way back with everybody.
But you and Mr. Foster worked together. The Braddock case, wasn't it?
The Braddock case was a triple homicide. There were about 20 detectives on it. My involvement was peripheral.
Cook looks at the judge, then steps back.
That's all.
Jack frowns. Later, outside.
I'm sorry. It was a couple of days on a case 7 years ago. I forgot.
You're human.
How bad is it?
Two old buddies scratching each other's backs.
That's not how it was.
I know that. You know that. But Judge Steinman, she might not have our clarity.
Jack walks down the courthouse steps. At night in his office.
I just got a call from Judge Steinman's clerk.
How bad?
We can't use Foster or the gun in front of the grand jury. It was an order to show cause, Jack. The case hasn't even started yet, so an appeal wouldn't be interlocutory.
No, it'd be an exercise in futility. The fact that Frisco and Foster were friends means they must have been in cahoots. How did you get in here?
The guard downstairs. Now, he's an old friend.
I have nothing to say to you, Mr. Foster.
I'm sure you've got plenty to say to me, but I truly appreciate you not saying it. Truth of the matter is, I'm here to talk. All you have to do is listen. Now, when I was in Travis Jones's apartment looking for the diary...
Illegally.
Be that as it may. I saw, what should I call it? His tools of the trade. Needles. Baggies filled with curious white powder. A rubber hose. It was in the top drawer of the nightstand beside his bed. Now, it hasn't been that long since I carried a badge. It looked a little...
Thank you, Mr. Foster.
Anytime.
Mike bows to Serena, then leaves.
I'll give this to him. He doesn't give up.
Frisco and Green, they talked to the members of Shane Mallory's band, right?
Yeah, they confirmed motive.
Motive gives us probable cause for a search.
You want to bust him on possession?
If Travis Jones did shoot up with Patty Wojtek the night she died, we might find some interesting fingerprints.
I'll get a warrant.
Outside the courthouse, they show their IDs.
Jack, the cops searched Jones's apartment. There was no heroin, but...
Probably celebrated after Judge Steinman's ruling.
There were plenty of prints, Jack, on the nightstand, on a baggie, on the hypodermic.
Patty Wojtek?
A 5-point match.
At the office with Arthur.
We don't need the gun. The prints put her in Jones's apartment.
My prints put my head in the fridge. Doesn't mean I finished the Cherry Garcia last night. Especially if I hire this fellow Cook to prove otherwise. We need more.
I don't think Jones is going to confess.
Why not? He's a hophead, right? Most of the time, they don't know which way is up.
Only Cook's not going to let him open his mouth in front of us.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, the case against Mr. Jones died at his evidentiary hearing. As such, we can talk to Mr. Jones without his attorney present.
No judge is going to buy that, Jack.
Unless we get a judge who wants to see the law expand to meet the times.
Jack and Arthur smile and go into their separate offices. Later, at Travis's apartment.
I don't want to talk about crisis.
A lot of bad blood, huh?
Look, I was there from the start. Just me and Shane. We sat together in math class.
Jack listens.
The guy didn't know nothing about music then, man. It was me that told him his poems were good. I was the one that said that, dude, we can do something with this. You know that song, Angel?
Yeah.
It was about me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He wrote it on that.
He gestures to a guitar.
He wrote everything on that. God, man, I died inside when he turned on me. You know what that's like, dying inside?
All because of Patty.
Me and Patty were like a perfect chord. Now she's dead. She's gone. But I still got that chord ringing in my brain.
Is that why you killed her, Travis, to get rid of that cord?
I didn't kill her.
But you hated her. And hell, if it wasn't for Patty, he'd still be the drummer of Crisis.
If that Christian couldn't...
What, Travis? Come to your house the night she was killed?
Yeah, she came, but I didn't kill her.
No, but you did try to ruin her life by selling her diary to Mike Foster.
Travis looks around.
I haven't seen that bitch in 5 years, man. And she comes down there and she's begging me for help. Please. Oh, I love watching her suffer, but I didn't kill her. And I didn't sell anything of hers. Patty. I've heard her regrets.
Jack frowns.
No need to thank me. Make yourself comfortable there.
In and out of the park, Mike. The place was filled with Patty's prints.
Well, there you go. You know, I'm glad to help after, you know. So, you pick up Travis?
We hit a little speed bump with that.
Oh, that wise-ass lawyer of his, right? That son of a bitch, you should lose his license.
Tell me, Mike, how much money did you actually pay Travis Jones for Patty's diary?
All right, so I told a little white one. I thought it would help your case.
We don't work that way.
What? Hey, don't give me that bull about the search for truth. You know what the system is all about.
Maybe you should explain it to both of us.
Well, it's not about truth, that's for sure. If it were, there'd be no rules of evidence. There'd be no privilege. There'd be no warrants. There'd be no probable cause.
In this country, there are things that are more important than putting the guilty man behind bars.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. The system could care less about innocence or guilt. All it wants is a show. No. What they want is the curtain to come down on the show. Closure. He did it, he didn't do it. It's all irrelevant to the system.
So to beat the system, it's okay to commit perjury.
Ends and means, right?
Tell you what, Mike. The world's a better place since you turned in your badge.
A true believer. I thought they all died out with Nicole Simpson.
Well, since you're so interested in putting the bad guys away, I'd appreciate it if I could see all your research on Shane Mallory's death.
What for?
Inevitable discovery. Hopefully, there's something there that would have led us to Travis Jones's gun independently of your breaking and entering.
I'm sorry, I can't help you there. I'm a journalist, remember?
Oh, I thought the Constitution didn't concern you.
I never said that. No, I just think that the framers should have put down their pens after they finished Amendment Number 1.
In Arthur's office.
I can't believe this guy. He'll perjure himself, he'll throw the Fourth Amendment out the window, but when it comes to his rights as a journalist, suddenly the Constitution becomes sacred.
Fortunately, every court in the country would agree with him. We can't force him to turn over his notes.
What do you think he's hiding?
Probably dozens of illegal break-ins in the name of proving that Shane Mallory was pushed off that building.
Or that the whole gun thing is a sham.
You think Foster killed Patty Wojtek?
The more I get to know him, the less I trust him.
Well, let me ask you both something. Since when does the freedom of the press apply only to the nattering nabobs of negativism?
Let's call the Daily News. Get our friendly Mr. Weisskopf on the phone.
Later, Lenny storms into Jack's office.
Well, we made the front page.
That was the point.
I realize Foster stunk up your case.
If you're interested, ballistics down in D.C. confirmed Jones's gun killed Patty Wojtek.
Look, I said he screwed up, but that's no reason to ruin his life.
The reporter asked the questions. I answered them as truthfully as I could.
Can you stop being a lawyer for a minute? You said that Mike Foster may have been involved in Patty Wojtek's murder.
I never said that.
No, but you implied he had a good motive for wanting her dead.
What I said was that with Patty out of the picture, no one could contest the conclusions he draws in his book about Shane Mallory's murder.
He leans on the desk and looks down at Jack.
Your old man was on the job, wasn't he?
22 years.
Yeah, he'd be real proud of you today.
That's not what gets me up in the morning, Detective.
Mike Foster was a good cop, Counselor.
Not anymore, he's not. You might want to tell Mr. Foster that Mr. Weisskopf of the Daily News will be receiving similar reports every day until he turns over his research.
In case you're interested, blackmail's against the law.
Arrest me.
Lenny leaves. Later, he's drinking at a bar when Mike approaches.
Hey, well, look who's here. Hey, Lenny.
Mike.
I heard you stayed out of places like this.
It's club soda. I like to beat myself up.
He drinks.
Johnny Black, straight up.
Mike sits beside him.
Listen, I'm sorry about this mess.
Yeah. Guys like McCoy, they gotta take out their measuring sticks every now and again. What are you gonna do?
You sound pretty calm for a guy the newspapers called a murderer.
Just some lawyer on a soapbox, you know, speculating, you know, just like a fly on my nose. Now, if McCoy had any real evidence, then that would be a horse of a different color.
You didn't.
Well, like McCoy said, have motive, an opportunity. And I already committed one felony that you know about. You know, come to think of it, why wouldn't I just turn over my papers?
You son of a bitch.
That, or maybe I just agree with the son of a bitch who said, any publicity is good publicity.
He drinks his shot, then stands.
Don't wet your pants, Lenny. I sent my stuff over to McCoy's office.
All of it?
Well, that I won't confirm or deny. But I'll tell you, I did include a box of Metamucil. You know, just to help them squeeze out whatever they can.
He leaves, and Lenny drinks his club soda. At the DA's office.
There's something to be said for the power of the press.
More to be said for the power of the old squeeze play.
Branch was right. Foster had the combination to a wall safe in Patty's house in Montauk.
Transcripts of recordings of illegal wiretaps.
Jack, a letter from Travis to Patty written 2 years ago. You ruined my life. If I see you, you'd better run or I swear I'll blow your brains across the room.
Sounds to me like probable cause to search for a gun. Call Van Buren.
Lenny and Ed approach Travis, who's smoking outside on a bench.
Hi. I know you.
That's right. We're part of your fan club, Travis.
Yeah. We're having a meeting tonight, and you're the featured speaker.
Okay, cool.
Later.
I swear to the gun once, Mr. McCoy. Try again. Doesn't apply in my court.
This letter indicates that Mr. Jones was, in fact, in possession of a gun.
At best, it's a colorful metaphor. At worst, an idle threat.
Perhaps, but certainly, any competent policeman would have followed up on such a threat. Any reasonable judge would have signed the search warrant, and anyone with two eyes would have found the gun.
It's Monday morning quarterbacking, Your Honor.
Something our Supreme Court loves. The gun is in.
Jack smiles. Later in the conference room with Travis and Cook.
The fact that you're here leads me to believe you have no plans to appeal.
It all depends what's on the menu.
First course, man money, does it all.
I can do better at the Chinese joint around the corner.
He allocutes to everything.
Whether they use a needle or not.
This means you have to tell the judge everything you did.
If it wasn't for me, there'd be no crisis, man.
I understand. It must be tough to get so close to musical history and then be forgotten altogether.
I could have started another band, man.
Why didn't you?
Me and Shane were like brothers. You got any idea what it's like being betrayed by a brother? Huh? It's like Abel and Cain, man. Abel and Cain.
Only you took your anger out on Patty Wojtek.
Well, she's the one who started it all. She's the one that broke us up.
This story may be more biblical than we think, Serena. Shane's guitar. How did you get it?
He stares at Jack.
After he died.
No. You said he wrote everything on that guitar. But you hadn't seen him in, what, 5 years? Not since both he and Patty dumped you.
You were there the night he died.
I think it's time for a coffee break.
You pushed Shane Mallory off that roof. What happened, Travis? Patty came to your apartment that night to get her diary. She saw the guitar. And she knew.
Nice husky out like garbage, man!
So you did the same to them?
He glares at Jack.
Now it's time for lunch.
Cook stands.
What? I gotta keep his mouth shut somehow.
Jack looks at Travis, who looks away. Later in the hall with Arthur.
You win the Cupid doll. Toss one pitch, knocked over two bottles.
Don't you mean tossed one illegal pitch?
Bob Gibson made the Hall of Fame throwing a spitball. Rules or no rules, he said. Pitchers are going to throw spitters. It's a matter of survival.
The elevator doors open.
Why doesn't that comfort me?
They get on the elevator and the doors close.